Welcome to the Unscripted Authentic Leadership Podcast, a podcast we are seeking to lead change while also seeking to understand. We are also here to provide a platform for leaders to come together to unite, to develop, and empower other leaders in the areas of business, family, faith, and community. I'm your host, Lafayette Lang, joined by my co-host, John LeBron. And today we are joined by a very special guest, Dr. Jeff Reed McGee. Those of you that will watch this and listen to this, put those clap emojis, put those hands together for our special guest today. He is here to talk to us about the five immediate proven strategies to business success in the new global economy and other leadership principles. We are excited about the conversation that we are getting ready to have with Dr. McGee. Before we get into that, we definitely want to say thank you to our unscripted audience, those of you that will follow us there, are part of our YouTube audience that you see there on the bottom of your screen, that have subscribed to our YouTube channel, Unscripted Authentic Leadership. For those of you that are part of our social media platforms, they are on Facebook, Unscripted Authentic Leadership, on Instagram at Unscripted Leadership. Our LinkedIn profile there is Unscripted Authentic Leadership. Those of you that listen to the podcast, you're part of our listening audience. You can stream our podcast on any platform that podcasts are streamed from: Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Pandora. Anywhere that you can find podcasts, you can type in Unscripted Authentic Leadership. You can find our podcast there. Those of you that want to connect with us on our website, unscripted-leadership.com, we have a special merch promotion going on there on our website. When you signed up for our Unscripted Club email group, you will receive a 10% off promo code once you sign up for the Unscripted Club email group. Listen, I'm not going to delay it any further. John has on some of that merch there. I want our special guest, Dr. Jeff McGee, just to tell us a little bit more about who he is, what he does, where he's from. And again, we say thank you for coming on at this time, Dr. Jeffrey McGee.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, and I appreciate the opportunity to share. So let's do the very brief who am I and get down to the better questions that can help the viewers. I'm a farm boy from Colorado that escaped on an athletic scholarship to go to college in Kansas. Spent some time in Kansas City in journalism, loved journalism, but got very discouraged in the 80s with how negative and bitter journalism is. Obviously not that way today at all. So that took me into sales, Fortune 100 route, and one thing after another, our careers all evolve. A lot of times as things happen, we don't see the reason for them, but part of success is looking backwards in the rearview mirror of life and seeing what our different experiences have given us, how we can take wisdom from that to become a better individual and a better leader. Today, I get the opportunity to work with business owners and leaders across the globe, tapping into their human capital at levels they never thought possible to attain greater levels of success. And along the route, I get a chance to also work with large corporations, small military generals, profit, nonprofit, but it's all about leadership success.
Incredible. Those of you that will listen to this, you just heard Dr. McGee is more than qualified as our special guest to bring on to talk about various leadership topics. And I cannot wait to get into this. I want to start off, Dr. McGee, by asking just a simple, or what can be deemed as a simple question. Can anyone be a leader? We're here on the Authentic Leadership Podcast. We talk about leader. We've said many times that everyone is a leader in their own right. Whether you have one person following you, 100 or thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of people, that everyone is a leader in their own right. What is your perspective on that? Can anyone be a leader?
You know, it's a great question. It's kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg? Are leaders born or are they created? The answer to all four of those is yes, 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 and yes. So Can anyone be a leader? You know, I remember years ago, the magazine I've had the fortune opportunity to publish for 30 years is Professional Performance Magazine. And Shaquille O'Neal was a very interesting interview. The first NBA player to have a master's degree. Now he has two PhDs. And one of his comments was his parents didn't cry when he became a basketball player and was making tremendous amounts of money. They cried when he went back to school and got his college degree. You know, education is the one thing, once you have it, no one can take it from you. I mean, you two gentlemen can lose your houses, your clothes, your cars. But again, as Benjamin Franklin said, the person who empties their purse into their head will never be bankrupt. So it's about knowledge. Wow. And if you work from that perspective, yes, anyone is a leader. In a vacuum, someone, something will always step forward. So first of all, you are a leader of yourself. You know, whether you choose to do nothing or do something, either one of those are a choice. Again, I tell people, you know, that again, the difference between success and failure is actually nothing. I mean, a lot of people spend billions of dollars trying to hawk their wares as to, you know, do this, you'll be more successful. What I've recognized, again, 31 books translated into 21 languages that I've written, it always comes back to the same thing. We as human beings are going to do five things. There's no way you can stop it. It's going to happen. The difference is, do you channel these five towards success or towards failure? And it's the same thing with a leader. I mean, leaders are going to be there. You're a leader if you are negative. You're a leader if you are positive. You're a leader if you are optimistic and have an abundance mentality and see the pie can always be enlarged. Or you're a leader when you put people down and have to toss people under the bus. You're a leader when you don't say something. I mean, a lot of times, lack of communication is massive communication. And today, the problem in this world we live in, doesn't matter your race, your ethnicity, your gender, your education, your background. We have a tremendous amount of people that are basically engaged in rhetoric and non-fact. And if you lack the knowledge and wisdom to be able to make critical decisions and have critical thought, you can be led down the road by some very disingenuous people. So I've just given you five different answers to, in essence, leaders. You're a leader whether you like it or not, and you can see leaders all around us, whether they're loud or whether they're quiet. And sometimes the best leaders don't say much, but people follow them.
Absolutely. Let's dig into that a little bit more, because you talked about those five things. And what are the five critical factors to leadership success? And why five? What are those, and how can we implement those as leaders?
You know, great question. Let me, if I can, Lafayette, let me park that to the side just for a minute. Let me give five other facts, and then we'll come back to those, because I just kind of said something I don't want to confuse our listeners. So let's back up to psychology for a second. So every one of us, what we have in common is that five things happen every day. Whether you wake up on time or you wake up late, doesn't matter. That's called a stimulant. Something caused you to wake up. But the five things that take place is every day we are behaviorally going to do something. We go to training programs to learn how to do something. That training is training us behaviorally to do certain things. So once we are consciously taught to do something behaviorally, then the second word, if you wanted to start writing words down as viewers, is that first thing in life is we do things out of behavior. That's a conscious act. Once we behaviorally learn how to do something, then the second level of behavior, I call it basically, is habit. Habits are subconscious behaviors. Once you do something consciously long enough, it's kind of autopilot. You're doing it without necessarily thinking about it. That manifests to the third level of behavior, which is what I call personal SOPs, standard operating procedures. This morning, you know, if you or I were to wake up and drive to work, let's say, and it's the way we drive to work day in and day out. Well, the first time we drove to that new job, we were consciously aware of behaviorally what to do and how to get there. After a couple of days, it became second nature. It's a habit. We're not really paying as much attention. A couple of weeks later, it's autopilot. You remember getting in the car. The next thing you remember is getting out of the car. How did I get here? And that's how a lot of people operate. So third level behavior is kind of that personalized SOP. Once you do that long enough, then the fourth level of behavior, I call this basically ownership level. You take ownership of the way you do things. And here's where businesses succeed and thrive. It's also where businesses tend to fail and where we get in trouble. Because once any one of us takes ownership of the way we think, the way we do things, it's all that my way or the highway mentality, then the fifth level of behavior kicks in, which is what I call emotional. You emotionally take ownership of your way of doing things. And most people then become very defensive when someone suggests a better way or a different way, or that your way is outdated. So that's the first level of five. It's just coincidentally five is going to be both of these answers to your question. So first thing we have to recognize is that you're going to go through those five stages every day, folks, whether you are aware of it or not, and whether you like it or not. So the choice then is, if I'm doing these five and I'm butting my head against the wall and I'm not being successful, then back up. Do the same five in another direction. Learn smarter behaviors that will allow you to be more successful, whatever it is you're doing. So that becomes your new habits. So that becomes your personal SOP. So that becomes what you take ownership of. And that's what you emotionally buy into. So change, another one of your opening comments, we could talk about change management as well. So when I talk about in management and leadership, there's five levels of what I've recognized successful leaders go through. First, you've got to understand that performance psychology tells us these five things are going to happen. So when someone says, come to my real estate program and I'll teach you how to be successful, or come to my investing program, I'll teach you how to be successful, or come to my exercise program, I'll teach you how to get into shape, or come to my fill in the blank with whatever, all that they're doing is they're going to show you new behaviors that you can make those habit forming, that you could personalize into your lifestyle and cadence and culture and environment, so that you'll take ownership of doing those things, so that you will emotionally get to where you want to go. So I just blew up $1 trillion worth of industry right there. Success or failure, you're going to have one of those two, and getting there is the same route. Now, with that, here's the question you actually started to ask first, but I wanted to lay the foundation. So what I've recognized in business, any business in the globe, I've got a client in the UK I'm working with doing video work just like we're doing here with this podcast. I've got a client in Berlin, a client in Brazil, clients all across North America. All of them have been incredibly successful in the past 24 months, while a lot of businesses have imploded because they've done these five. Number one is strategy. If you want to be successful in any business, just like your podcast, there's an obscene number of podcast programs today, especially in the last 24 months. It seems like everyone with a mouth thinks they're a podcaster, just like anyone with fingers thinks they're a writer or a blogger. The difference is what makes you two gentlemen successful is you're coming at it from an authentic standpoint. Oh, there's a novel thought. Maybe we could call the program that. So when you look at the word authentic, then that means all of the BS has to be moved off the table. And this is where, again, you can call people out as politely as you want or as boldly as you want. But you call people out on what does work and you call people out on what doesn't work. So that's part of a definition of many of the word authentic, real, core, genuine. So number one is strategy. What's your strategy? What's your business plan? What's your values? They drive strategy. What's your vision of where you want to go? That drives your strategy. Lack of strategy causes lots of noise and confusion in the market space. So what is your strategy? That goes to number two, the word ops. All of your operational systems, processes, procedures, how you do things will be born out of what is your strategy? What is your strategic intent? So whenever I work with a new leader, I take these five, I've only given you two, and I use them this way. I'll say, okay, so John, I'd love to come in and work with your organization. You're billing out right at $300 million right now. You say you want to become a $1 billion company in the next 10 years. So help me to understand, what is your strategic intent? What is your strategy? Where is it you're trying to go? Why do you want to go there? What makes you different? How are you going to do that? So I can just battery all those great questions, but it's going to strategy every time. What are your values? I'm going to find out what John's values are, and that'll tell me whether or not his strategy has any feet and it's going to walk or run, and if there's any inconsistencies. I can see, in essence, if they're in alignment. There's your buzzword of the day. So strategy. Then we'll look at, okay, operationally, for us to accomplish a strategy, here's operation, what we need to look at, or the human capital we need to bring into play, etc. Third, the third element then is going to be behaviors. Back to the word behavior of my first model. So behaviorally, who has to do what? At what time of the day do we need to do this? What sense of urgency? Southwest was a client of mine for many years. It's anyway, Southwest Airlines, again, profitability for 50 consecutive years. The last year with the COVID of 2020, take that off the table. But what's interesting in the airline industry, they're the only airline to be profitable every year they've been in business. They can turn a plane in 13 to 22 minutes with three employees on the ground. They typically get three additional flights per day per jet. They're a union shop, but the way they were built from day one is that everyone has skin in the game, but everyone understands the strategy. When the plane's on the ground, we're losing money. So everyone has a sense of urgency to get the plane on the ground, turn it, get it back going. If you've ever flown Southwest, you experience that. Other airlines sometimes mimic that. Anecdotally, they do that. But system-wide, a lot of airlines struggle to make that happen because their strategy is wrong, their ops are wrong, and behaviorally, no one wants to get off their butt and work. I'll be real blunt about it. Today, we need people that want to work. Gallup organization has massive research. Pause for a second. So the three first of the five words I've given you, strategy, ops, and behavior. Any good business book talks about that. Any good business school talks about that. Those three concepts are nothing new, Lafayette, to your question. So then you've got to, and our viewers have to say, okay, then McGee, so why are so many businesses not as successful as others? It's because the first three everyone knows. The difference is the next two for the total of five. Number four is the word execution. At the end of the day, someone has to shut up and do the work. Look at the success of your podcast. You two gentlemen do a tremendous amount of work before the camera ever rolls. And see, this is the fun time for the three of us, if McGee ever shuts up. So this is the fun part. But there's a ton of work that you have to do before and after this. That's the execution. See, again, the problem we have in North America, more than anywhere else globally I go, is in North America, we have this endless long line of people that are all envious of what someone else has or what someone else has accomplished. but I've never seen the line of people envious of the work it took to get there. See, that's the problem. So execution is what differentiates the mediocre from the successful. So that's level four. And level five is the word accountability. So the five levels of business success in any business: strategy, ops, behavior, execution, and accountability. And there's levels of accountability. Again, if the first level of accountability in a house is parents taking accountability for what's going on, if the first level of accountability in a business is the boss taking accountability for what's going on, you will never have a successful house or a successful business, because that's the last level of where accountability. The parents and the boss are last in that list, and that's what people pay me an obscene amount of money to figure out what number 4, 3, 2, and 1 is on accountability.
That was
wow.
So I think we're done.
Mic drop.
My brain is about to explode. I love the accountability thing. We will come back to that. I'm sure I'll let Lafayette leave it in a minute. Actually, thank go ahead, Lafayette. I have some questions, but you start off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You talked about those five critical factors, and your level of expertise, a few of those areas is the capital development, the business building. Talk to us about what you saw from businesses, entrepreneurs in the year 2020, what you saw in the DNA, the fiber of that company. You talked a little bit about when you talked about the Southwest Airlines. What was in that DNA that caused them to thrive through situations as the pandemic and even going forward that did not stop them, because it was something that was in the thread and the fiber of their company that they already had before 2020 hit? What did you see?
Brilliant questions. So there are several responses to that. Let me start with these ones. So I live in Las Vegas at the time of this recording. And during 2020, I lived in a high-rise condominium on the Las Vegas Strip. So for any of our global viewers today, if you've ever been to Las Vegas, just visualize that. So Las Vegas Strip has roughly 10 major high-rise condominium complexes along that strip from downtown to the far end of the strip. Thousands and thousands of residents living vertically. So I remember going out for my walks and jogs down the strip during the height of 2020, and it's closed. I mean, you could literally walk or jog the entire strip and see maybe two cars the entire length of it. It was a ghost town. It was surreal. So in that, there are roughly 85% of the restaurants on the Las Vegas Strip that were closed during COVID are still closed 24 months later, basically, or are partially open. So those restaurants, when they were open in 2019, you have millions of people coming along the Las Vegas Strip. So this could be anywhere in America. So just break this story down, folks. Scale it up or scale it down. And so whether you were really that good didn't matter, because with millions of pedestrians, you've got pedestrian traffic. Someone's going to fall inside your restaurant, whether they liked your food or not. So by default, you could be good. Now, a lot of them were celebrity chefs, because that was the formula. So a lot of celebrity chefs are like any business. A lot of times businesses are started by entrepreneurs that are passionate about an idea they have. And the ones that are successful, to your question, Lafayette, also understand salesmanship. They understand how to sell their idea. They understand how to get out there and get their hands dirty. A lot of celebrity chefs, the reality, this has been a long time since they actually had to go out on the streets and talk to you and grab you to come into your restaurant. It's a long time ago since they actually had to organically do advertising and marketing. And that's why a lot of them have imploded. And that could be with any business. See, again, in good times, you don't have to be that damn good, to be blunt, and you can still make a good living, because it's a matter of turns. It's a matter of numbers. But what COVID provided to us, and so I tell my business audiences when I walk out on stage and I'm working with organizations, COVID has been the best Christmas present a business person could ever ask for, because it just keeps on giving. It shows stupidity at levels of stupidity that Hollywood could never even write up. So here's what happened. So let's say, Lafayette, we own a small restaurant in any town in America and COVID's just hit. And your governor said, basically, you have to shut down, which is not what any governor said. What the governor said in lots of states was you can't have anyone coming into your business. Mm. In 2020, I didn't see one Starbucks with a drive-up window go out of business. Did you? I didn't see one McDonald's, Taco Bell, or Panda Express with a drive-up window go out of business. Did you? Excellent. So it's interesting. So we have to be able to flip the mental paradigm. So here's the first answer, everyone, to Lafayette's question. What did I see them doing? You have to, in business, be able to flip paradigms in a nanosecond every day of the week. You cannot become comfortable and become complacent with the way you do things is great, because someone's going to come up and kick your butt. Competition's always looking for a way. And if you're successful, they're going to mimic you and try to take it to the next level. So the first thing, if you own that restaurant, let's say John's the manager and I work in the restaurant, and whether I'm the chef or whether I'm the dishwasher, or whether I'm the greeter at the door, what we should have done was, okay, wait a second, all of us come together. See, I'm a big believer that the two most important roles in the post-2020 era that you need in an organizational chart, so Lafayette, let's go back to the CEO of the company. The two most important roles you need is not the typical org chart that would have you as a CEO, you draw a line down and horizontally you have all the rest of the C-suite, whether it's the CFO or the COO or et cetera. There's actually a new org chart that right below the CEO, you drop down just a little bit, and there's two roles there that then you drop down to the rest of the C-suite. See, I think what COVID has proven, and I've been writing about this for decades, and people have not been listening, and a lot of them are the ones that got in deep trouble in 2020, is the two most important roles you need in your business is your CFO and whatever title you're going to give to your human capital person, your CHRO, your chief human resource officer, or your chief leadership officer, or whatever those two titles are, because the most important assets you need as a CEO in your business of today and tomorrow is nothing else in your business chart, just to make everyone stressed out. Your money and your people, because the money and people you have don't work for your competition, and the money and people your competition have, you don't have on your ledger. But anything else, buildings, equipment, IT, legal, I hate to pop bubbles, but any of those other people, they can be found. So those are your two biggest assets. So now back to the restaurants on the Vegas Strip. So if you would have come to us and said, wait a second, guys, what can we do so we don't have to shut this restaurant down? Then one of us, whether me, the employee, or John management, or you, the CEO and chef, one of us would have said, wait a second. These 10 high-rise condos on Las Vegas Strip represent thousands of homeowners just vertically instead of smashing it down and call it a suburb. So if we went to every one of those high-rise condos and went in and said, you know what, my name's Lafayette Lane. I have this celebrity chef restaurant. We want to keep our people employed. We realize you have thousands of people living in your building. There's a mailroom somewhere in your building that all the residents come down to get their mail every day. Can we put some signage in that area? Can we put some menus here? Can we bring free food to the people working here in the morning, people working at lunch, people working in the evening? Because if our food's good, they're going to become ambassadors and be championing our restaurant to everybody. Imagine at the beginning of 2020, if we actually knew there was a company called Uber Eats, or we realized we could rework our website instantly for order out or drive up, or people could walk up and get food, our restaurant probably would have made more money in 2020 than it did in 2019. And I can prove that model because there's a Starbucks between where I live in the Strip that had huge walk-in traffic every day and has a drive-up. And at the end of 2020, I asked the manager one day as I'm going through the drive-thru that exact question. What was your revenues like this year with your store closed except the drive-up compared to 19? Before I finished the question, she started laughing. She said, we made more money this year with COVID in our lobby locked down than we made the year before. So again, that's an example. Business leaders get stuck in their way. They don't realize their number one asset is their human capital. That's their number one asset. They don't engage their team and make them a partner in their success. They don't give them skin in the game. They don't give them a way to bring their creative DNA to the office every day, as they say. And that's where businesses get in trouble. And what confuses everything, before I toss this ball back to you two guys, is there's a ton of consultants out there in the world that have no clue what they're saying, and they're creating confusion for people like me and you that are trying to be successful, because there's a lot of one-hit wonders. If you look at the resume, they've never had a job for more than 2 years, but they're going to give you advice. Well, there's a clue. If they've never had a job for more than 2 years, they pretty much probably sucked.
That's true. There you go.
There it is.
Yeah. So it's funny you mentioned that story, because we've been talking for a while about how people have to be willing to make a pivot or recognize when the pivot is appropriate. I'm not saying pivot all day, because you'll never go anywhere. Literally, you just go in circles. But if you think about basketball or so forth, but you have to be willing to recognize when you have to like make a slight tweak to go in the proper direction. And Lafayette's mentioned that multiple times. So what you had mentioned, and it's funny because we had just talked about this before the show, that their strategy and their values have to line up. Can you talk to that for a minute? Because how does I'm assuming you go into, you'll at times will go into a leadership, ask what's your strategy, and then you'll say, what are your values? And they probably get very silent, as in they don't know what the values are. They might know their core personal values, but do they line up with the company values with the strategy? For example, we had talked about before this show about certain mission statements and so forth. And What is our next, what is a strategy that we want to implement on a product or a service? And does it line up with our core mission statement and our values? And we had that conversation just an hour ago. So what about with a large company or any company, as far as what is your strategy and do the values line up with that strategy? How do they know?
It's a great question. You know, one of the things I talk about in my book, Trajectory Code, you talk about making pivots, and you don't want to just make pivots for the sake of it. You'll go nowhere. And that's exactly right. And you also want to make pivots just because the guy across the street or the lady across the street does something that works for them doesn't mean it's going to work for you. It goes back to, and I love what you just asked as your question. So let's unpack that. Your values drive who you are. And our values are first influenced from a very early age before we have any clue about anything in life. Our family, our friends, our educators, the people if we go to church, our neighbors, our playmates, our values are always being shaped, and therefore they're also being challenged and tugged at. So your values basically is like your GPS. It's your navigational system. It's going to tell you what's inbound and out of bound for what you want to participate in, what you're going to tolerate, what you're going to condone, what you're not going to tolerate. So your values then drive your vision. Your vision is in your head, this bigger picture of what you want to aspire to be or what you want to do or what you want your business to be about. And then how you articulate that is a mission statement. A mission statement is kind of like an outwardly focused statement that says, this is what we're about. Therefore, every decision we make should be able to be benchmarked against our mission statement. Any deliverable we're going to have should be able to be benchmarked against our mission statement. That's also how it keeps you in alignment. Now, that gives you some clarity to your question in a lot of ways that could apply. So one, when you look to who am I going to collaborate with, business alliances or partnerships I want, then you go back to our values, our vision, our mission statement. Who has something that they're going in similar directions? We can complement one another. If I'm interviewing someone, again, keep in mind a lot of laws are created by people that could never get a real job. It's why they go to political office. It's kind of scary if you think about it. It doesn't matter what your political views are, folks. If you look at some of the people that you've elected, and you back this up and say, if you were a CEO of a business, would you hire them? And it's stunning. A lot of times you'd say, no, I'd never hire them. They haven't got no credentials. They went from being an employee and a mediocre one at best to somehow they got elected. Well, you know, great for them. But again, that's an example of a misalignment. So in one part of our life, we actually will push our values to the side to vote for someone. But if I turned the table and said, but would you hire them in your business? You'd go, oh, no, I wouldn't. So see, values are interesting. When do we choose to abandon them? And when do you choose to say, no, I'm holding on to them? So values. So if I'm interviewing someone, my little tirade was for a purpose, because the questions that you should be able to ask in any kind of an interview in lots of businesses will get you legally in trouble. If you're a small business with about a dozen-ish employees or less, there's a lot of questions you legally actually can ask. But if you're a business with hundreds or thousands of employees, some of those same questions can get you in deep trouble. But values is a safe question. Tell me, John, what are some of the values that guide how you operate your life? That's a fair question. You know, Lafayette, we're looking at promoting you into this role, and I'm new in the company. You've been here a lot longer than I've been here. So you obviously have been doing a great job, or the business wouldn't be here, and therefore I wouldn't have a job. So thanks for what you've been doing. But share with me, what are your guiding values? So see, I could ask that question whether someone's been here longer than me or new to me, or they're not even a part of the organization. So values are important. Again, values. You could ask situational questions. Recently, I was driving down the road and I had an individual in my car, and these are the values. There's a person standing on the corner that was basically asking for money. We see people like this all the time. And sometimes you question, okay, is this a game or not? But this person visually obviously had wounds on their body that, you know, they have a health issue, and their sign was basically they wanted, you know, some money so they can get some gauze bandages. So we pulled over to the side of the road. The other person motivated this conversation, not Jeff McGee. I was pulled into this. And then when I got pulled in, I said, you know what? You're right. These are values that I have, but yours were louder than McGee's. So we went to the Walgreens and he went inside and he bought all this, you know, the gauze bandages and whatnot. So we then came back and gave that to him and gave him some money, but you could tell the person was blown away because no one had actually went to those steps. So that's a story example of our values drive our behaviors. Remember the first five things I taught everybody today, behavior, drive habits, drive your personal SOP. That's what you're going to take ownership and live by, and then you wrap your emotions around it. So values are huge, and there's a lot of ways to find them out. But again, sometimes people are very disingenuous. So again, for our viewers, you got to use some common sense here. Don't walk into this, you know, thinking utopia time and that everyone's genuinely sincere, because we live in a place called reality. So again, it's great to have altruistic views, but be aware of reality. Values drive all of that. Absolutely.
The reason I was asking that was because I feel like it plays into what we just left off of, is making a change or pivot. So I saw a lot of small businesses I don't want to mention because I don't know if they listen or not, but they complained on Facebook and social media all year long about, and I get it, it sucked. And there's a lot of things that really, you know, made it hard for business, but they complain about the governor, they complain about this and that. Here's the problem. These are things you can't control. Therefore, you can complain about it or you can do something about it.
And then, the entrepreneur understands the difference between those two. The things that I might complain about, I'm not going to dismiss them. I'm going to put them over here on a different list. So when I'm in a place where I can influence influencers to do something, or if I'm ever in a role and I can do something, then I will address and attack those. Mm-hmm. In the meanwhile, what can I do? And that goes right back to my restaurant. See, again, a lot of restaurants, you know, here in Las Vegas went out of business and, you know, during 2020, and they're gone. But not one of them realized, wait a second, they were lazy. There's one really famous restaurant on the Strip that's partially open today, but its comments, you know, in March, April, May of 2020 was, well, we're shut down because obviously we are here for the convention traffic. So that tells you how passive of a business they really are. They're waiting for the leftovers to show up. And so they said, well, we're going to, you know, put everything on hold until the September. Well, you know, nothing opened up in 2020 in Las Vegas. So they're gone. But right back to the element, they never stopped to think, wait a minute, what about the other potential customers that live in this area, or the smaller business meetings that were taking place in Las Vegas versus the big, huge conventions? See, everyone gets complacent. And that's one of the things Gallup has some stunning research that everyone needs to stop and think about in 2020, 21, and 22. They surveyed a couple years ago and they revisited right before COVID. And the data, I think, is actually not only very accurate, it's actually probably being very nice based upon what I see globally. And so they surveyed thousands of businesses. So right out of the gate, this makes the survey very different than normal. I mean, normally Gallup and most organizations, they'll survey, you know, between 10 and 100 people, and they'll draw and extrapolate from that an opinion, and they'll put that out into the social media and media world. And then dumb people follow that like a bunch of sheep, and they say, oh, must be true. This is different for Gallup, where they actually surveyed thousands of businesses, which meant hundreds of thousands of responders. And what they found was three population pools. 56% of people identified as complacent or disengaged in a workplace, meaning to me, what it looks like in workers is, what's the least I have to do to still keep my paycheck? And we see that all over the place with people that are not actually even doing their jobs anymore. I fly on a regular basis to get from where I live to my clients. So I will do anywhere from 10 to 20 airline flights every month, flight attendants, and I'll still see flight attendants that are great, but it is stunning the number of flight attendants today that are massively lazy. They have fallen into the 56th percentile, and they're doing absolutely the bare minimum of their job because they don't think that I'm a business traveler with millions of miles and understand what service looks like in 2019. They're thinking as if everyone's had a lobotomy and their brains are at zero in 21, 22, and starting new. Then 15% of the responders were actively disengaged. That means these are people that are passive aggressively working against management systems and values of a business. These are the people that bitch for a living and all they can do is complain and find fault with people. Therefore, 29% of the people are engaged doing their job. So when I have a flight attendant in the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 months that actually is doing their job, what's sad is it blows my mind because, again, I know what they can do, should do, or supposed to do, but they've dropped it down to absolutely the least amount of work possible. I got on a flight, literally, as we're recording this today for our viewers. Yesterday, I got off of a flight where I was on a plane for 4.5 hours, switched planes, was on another plane for 3.5 hours getting home when I flew from one side of the planet to here. So in that time, what's interesting is that 7 flight attendants I had a chance to interact with, 1 out of the 7 was doing their job, 29 percentile. 1. The other 6 were in the 56%. What's the absolute bare minimum I have to do to keep my paycheck? And that's the way society is today. So now if I come back to your value statement or Lafayette, your question, what leaders do, we've got to start looking at who are my 29 percenters of my organization and what do I do to grow them, engage them, listen to them, and keep them and retain them so my business can succeed and the other 56% will step up. And how do I interview to recruit the 29 percenters that are out there in society that don't want, in essence, be a part of a losing team? But we as a nation have also conditioned people to be 56%. When you will pay people to stay home, you are no longer a capitalist or a democracy. You're going into socialism without even getting into politics. And that is messing up people's value systems, John, you just asked. Ooh, there's a scary conversation.
Yeah, I want to go back. You made a statement about accountability. What can leaders do to build an accountability culture within their organization?
Great question. So accountability happens at different levels. So number one, if you want to build it into your organization, you have to see it, say it, touch it, feel it everywhere in the organization. So that's the first answer. Because if you don't live it and breathe it everywhere, people will see where and when you don't, and that becomes the cancer that implodes it. Because I can say, well, Lafayette's not doing it with John. John gets away with everything. Oh, Johnny's the boss's pet. I mean, people who pick this stuff out. Oh, John gets the great jobs. He gets the good tasks. You know, McGee, I get the bad ones. I mean, everyone loves, again, think about adages. Misery loves company. So one, you've got to do it everywhere. Now, with that, here's my rule of five. We're on some rules of five today, just coincidentally. Yeah. But again, I've learned from businesses that truly are successful, the first level of accountability is self-accountability. When people hold themselves accountable, then we start to laugh yet get what you said. So the way you do self-accountability is, number one, if you have a clear job description or job responsibilities, or you've been clearly communicated to when something's delegated to you and you have clarity of what you're supposed to do, then it's easy to hold yourself accountable because you've got the key performance indicators. You've got the game plan. So accountability level one is it yourself. The number two is with the job description. If we have a really clear job description and expectation of your role and how John connects to you and how I connect to John and how the three of us make a really strong chain because all of our links are connected, if we all understand what each other is supposed to do, then we can do one and two, but that takes us into level three, which is peer accountability. We don't tattletale on each other. We're not tossing anyone under the bus, but peer accountability. We're holding people accountable. Again, let's go back to Southwest Airlines. For years when they were a client of mine, it's not unusual to see a baggage handler coming up the stairs and up to the gate to ask a gate agent, hey, is there anything else you need help with? But they're there to kind of hold each other accountable. Like, hey, don't wait until, you know, we're late to say you've got 10 bags up here you need me to come get. So, you know, people will take the bags down the stairs. So people cross lines. I see this in some of my agricultural clients. I've got some phenomenal clients in California and Wisconsin and Michigan and the Carolinas. They do phenomenal jobs. I got, you know, tech clients and financial clients. And again, all of them are successful. They're doing what you two gentlemen just asked. They've got this embedded culture of accountability. So it starts with self. It goes to the job responsibility description. It goes to the peer. It goes to customer. Do you have a customer feedback loop that really gives you feedback that you act upon? If I get off of Delta Airlines and they ask me for a quick survey because I'm a diamond level flyer, which is their highest level flyer, which means I spend way too much money with them. So they should value me. I'm the one that's really helping to make paychecks possible. So if they send me a survey and ask me some questions and I give them some good feedback and they never respond back to me, we've got a problem at level four. When they say, okay, customer feedback, but if they're not doing anything with it and they're not giving me any feedback, then we've got a break. In terms of peer, if you try to hold each other accountable and someone's being the wild card and a renegade and say, no, you're not the boss of me, get out of my face. Well, we got a problem there. If your job description's outdated, we got a problem there. If you could care less, back to John, your question about values, because I really don't have any values. There's a sad commentary on some people. Then it breaks down. So it starts with yourself. Then it goes to, in essence, job description or any KPIs, goes to peer, goes to customer. And then level five is going to be the boss, the supervisor, the business owner. Again, same thing at home. If Lafayette, you're the younger brother to John and I'm, you know, same age as John, we're twins, and our parents say, hey, you know, watch out for your little brother. Well, that's our parents stepping in at level five. Well, maybe they need to do that. But once they've told John that once, if John steps up and he's taking care of you, that's level one. Personal accountability is taking care of the younger brother. So you see that in homes. Again, I was in Maryland years ago when they were having the riots in downtown Maryland. So here's an example of your question. Very controversial, but here's an example. And people were rioting in the streets, and there was a mom dressed in yellow. And I don't know who this mom is, but she's mother of the freaking year. And so you see kids on the street rioting. A little bit later, the cameras are live, and there's a mom in yellow, and she goes up and she grabs her child. And you hear her on camera saying, we don't act this way. We don't do this. See, that's in essence accountability to what your values are. You can still let people know your views, but you don't do it by destroying someone else's property. See, again, but we don't want to have those critical conversations because we think they're taboo and we don't want to talk about the things we need to talk about. And that goes back to the center of everything we've talked about. So again, if we want to talk about, you know, this unscripted leadership, it is stepping up, and doing what you need to do, even when a lot of people around you are going to say, oh, wow, that's uncomfortable. Success is not comfortable. It's a hard work product.
Wow. John, you have something, bro?
I was always told leadership should be spelled E-X-A-M-P-L-E. It's all about being an example. Yeah, I had once heard somebody said he was listening to you and mentioned Shaq being a good example with all things he does and represents. And that's, I think I agree. But they listened to another athlete. Someone said, well, how do you feel about people saying you're not a good, you need to be a better example? And he said, I'm not an example. I never asked to be. And then the conversation ended. But I remember thinking, everybody is an example. You're either a good one or you're a bad one. You don't get to be neutral.
And that's critical. If you were going to say, I never asked to be one, then you also have to accept you don't take advantage of your celebrity-dom or your new checkbook that you're getting to then use that to influence other people. If you're going to say, hey, I never chose to be an example and I don't want to be one, then you have to make sure you go on that playing field. You're that athlete. Your mouth never opens. When you leave the field, it never opens. And when someone asks you for your view or join my cause, you say no. See, that's, John, I love what you just said. Some people like to selectively choose when they want to step in the game and when they want to step out. Either you're all in or you're not. And it's really hard to not be in the game of life. Some people can do that. And some people have said, hey, this is not my role. Dolly Parton, phenomenal woman. I was on the board of directors for the American Eagle, Bald Eagle Foundation for a number of years, which a lot of people in America don't realize. That's our national bird. But our federal government doesn't even put aside any money for the caring of bald eagles and taking care of injured bald eagles. So Dolly Parton has never asked for popularity or credibility or fame out of this or notoriety or thank you. But again, in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, at Dollywood off to the side, I mean, that's where she has and she funds the American Eagle Foundation. But again, she's chosen to realize, okay, I'm an entertainer first. So anything outside of that, you know, when people ask about politics, she says, it's not my job to give my opinion or come be a part of this. And she realized that could be part of someone or the other. She has turned that down every time her entire life because of back to your statement, John, if she's going to say, wait, it's not my job to go there. So when someone says, hey, it's not my job to be an example, I didn't ask for it. Okay, I'll go with that. But you have to be willing to keep your mouth shut then on everything else.
Yeah, my point is I think by default, everybody's an example, whether they have a large platform or almost no platform, right? A leader is by definition anyone with a follower. And so therefore, virtually everyone on planet has somebody that looks at them. Even if they're not following them, you're still setting the wrong example or the right example at all times. Whether you go into the store, whether you go into the store and you make a bad choice in there, you kind of slide in front of someone in line or whatever the case may be, you make those choices all day and nobody's perfect and you don't have to be. You can be a great leader and still have mess ups. And
just be consciously aware and situationally aware. Absolutely. It was my opening line. We're all leaders no matter what the choice is. But if you're going to say, I didn't choose to be in this role, you're exactly right. Then that's a leader. But you have to make the choice then to keep your mouth shut on everything. And that's going to be a leader because people will see, okay, wait a minute. You can still have a view. You just don't have to voice it. But if you're going to voice it in one place, it doesn't give you freedom in the next place. And that's part of the problem in leadership is people want to choose when and where to be a leader and when to say, oh, that's not my role. You know, once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
Sure. Dr. McGee, you've been dropping the mic all episode.
But thank you, sir.
Give our unscripted audience one last drop the mic statement as we wrap up that can apply to leadership. If you were to just say one last statement, what would that be to our audience?
Legacy. Legacy, legacy. No matter who you are, back to John's point about walking in a store, driving down the road, at home, virtually, on the phone, at work, wherever you are. Again, none of us are guaranteed tomorrow is going to arrive. None of us. So what do you do with the gift of life today? That's your legacy. How do you engage, influence, or touch other people? That's your legacy. If you're a parent, your children are not your legacy. Let me push this down the road further. Your children aren't your legacy. It's what your children do because of you to that next person, that next generation. So if you're a parent, your grandkids would be your legacy because how do your kids raise them? That's where your legacy is going to be seen. It's not what your kids just do, but it's that next generation. If you're a business owner, it's not just your employees or your legacy, but how your employees engage each other, how they engage the external constituent or customer. So legacy, again, you know, That would be my last comment. Always need to be thinking about the concept of legacy. If this is the last of you, what is it you want others to see? If there's a hidden videographer videotaping us every day, and at the end of the day, that's the videotape that people can download to see what your last 24 hours was about. Would that be the legacy you would want them to see? Is that the legacy your parents would want them to see? Is that the legacy your grandparents would want people to see? Hey, this is what my blood did on the planet in the last 24 hours. Were they neutral? That's okay. Were they a giver, a grower, a developer, an enabler, or did they do something that took away? So legacy, do you plus or do you negative sign people? You should always be plussing or step off the planet and make room for someone else.
Amazing. And I think it's just ironic because our podcast episode last week that we did was talking about leaving a lasting legacy. So those of you that will listen to this and watch this, legacy, legacy, legacy. And we want you all to connect with Dr. McGee. One of the ways that you can do that, you can follow him on social media, on connect with him on his LinkedIn there, Dr. Jeffrey McGee. You can find him there on his LinkedIn page. He also has open enrollment conferences in Las Vegas, Nevada, quarterly each year. You could connect with him there about his conferences. Can you tell us a little bit more briefly about what those enrollment conferences are, Dr. McGee?
Thank you very much. So leadership and sales is where I grew up, and I take leadership from kind of an interesting angle. Everything I believe that, and even some of the conversations we've had here today of successful business leaders somewhere in their life have sales, revenue generation in their pedigree. And so I play with those too, but my open enrollment programs in Las Vegas each quarter under resources on my website. People, you can check them out for upcoming events. But I do a two-day sales boot camp where I take the same two-day sales training program that I do with my Fortune 100 clients, my mid-cap business clients I work with on a daily, regular basis, with the National Guard recruiters that I do. And I just make that available to the open public each quarter because I believe there is a hunger for great sales training. We spend one full day on strategic selling concepts and ideas. Day two is tactical implementation and the behaviors of successful selling. Everyone leaves with a workbook. They leave with action plans. They leave with audios. They leave with copies of my book. And that's the program. So thank you for asking. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only does he have open enrollment conferences there, Dr. Jeffrey McGee also has the Leadership Academy of Excellence. Tell us a little bit more about that as well, Dr. McGee.
So that's my signature program and product. And what I do in that area is I work with business leaders. So whatever the CEO, whatever she or he deems to be appropriate for their leaders, current leaders or emerging next generation leaders. And we come together for a day and a half every month for a minimum of 12-month commitment they make. We use some of my college textbooks as some of the base reading materials. Each month, we have a workbook that goes through some specific strategies or techniques that they're going to implement in their own sphere of influence for the next 30 days. All that's kept in a binder system we create that has their logo and mine on it. There's some coaching and online learning management system touch points as well. We come back together the next month. We debrief what we did the previous month, make sure we're having growth and implementation. We lay on top of that the next learning skill set. So in the course of the first 12 months, we build 12 core leadership building blocks that most leaders have some acumen with, but not all 12. It really grows a team. It brings them together. Back to John, your statement about values earlier. We embed the business's values and mission and true needs into it. If I do my job right and we have the growth and development we tend to get, that continues on to a year, two, three, four, five. So I have one client I've been working with 44 leaders once a month for 16 years. My smallest client is a client with 8 key leaders I work with once a month and working with them for many years. And I have typically 1 to 2 new clients I bring on each year. So that's the Leadership Academy of Excellence. We grow the leadership DNA of a team.
Absolutely. And last but not least, you also can check out Dr. McGee's www.professionalperformancemagazine.com, and it's free digital subscription for listeners. And so that is another way that you can connect with Dr. Jeff McGee. And again, we say thank you, Dr. McGee, for coming on and just shedding your wisdom and impartation to our audience on the various aspects of leadership, accountability, and so much more. We have definitely been blessed and have enjoyed you as a guest. As always, we ask you to continue to support us on our unscripted various platforms there on our YouTube.
Absolutely.
There.
Everybody needs to be following you. This has been great. Yeah. Both of you guys, thank you so much for what you're doing. And thank you for bringing me on your program.
thank you so much for coming on. And connect with us there on our various social media platforms. Stream this episode. It'll be available for you all there. And connect with Dr. McGee. As always, we pray that you be the leader that God has called you to be. We're here to build bridges and not walls. Bridges connect and walls divide. Until next time.